This is Mitch Mallett. Welcome to the Morning Edge. And welcome, Augie.
Well, we'll work out this introduction a little more. Good morning, Tampa Bay. And you know what happened yesterday, and you heard me talking on the previous show with Reverend Williams on the issue of forgiveness that he's been talking about, which I really appreciate. The Old Testament being one of vengeance, and the Old Testament is a problem, as is what else? The Confederate flag. The unforgiving South. And what do we do? So you have a situation where a people can't be a people if part of the people want to go one way and the other part wants to go another. But then we had a great leader who said, government's the problem, not the solution. Who was that?
That was Ronald Reagan.
Good old Ronald Reagan. He just did good. Yeah, he knew how to do. He knew how to separate people. He did. He wrecked California when he left his governor there. They went from, I think, from number 3 in education to number 18. But the idea being, he got the government confused as to which government was the problem. I think he didn't realize that he was really talking about state government. State government like Mr. Scott, who turned away $50 billion in Medicaid for the poor for $500 million in monies from, directly from your taxpayer monies, directly out of your pocket to try to prop up the LIP program that's going to last a couple more years with half the money coming from the federal government and the other half coming from the state. So it doesn't look as though he's crushing the poor like he really is. But anyway, we've got things that on the...
Well, that's a whole show by itself.
Of course it is. Of course
it is. We'll leave it at that, right?
That's right. That's right. But then you have lighter notes, such as, are they really an indication of what kind of people we are? Because right now, Mr. Peter Rose, who is Peter Rose, the great baseball player?
Pete Rose?
Pete Rose, that's right. I call him Peter Rose, but then again, I say that in mockery, because there's a nice little article about this man who wants to get the Hall of Fame, and he's being admitted. Let's see now.
Are they going to admit him?
The Major League Baseball banned Rose from the sport in 1989 after a report by former federal prosecutor John Dowd found that Rose had bet on the Reds in games through mob-connected bookmakers from 1984 to 1986. Dowd based his findings on sworn testimony from a bookie and testimony in a recorded phone conversation between Michael Bertoloni and Paul Jansen, both associates of Rose's that established. Bertoloni had placed bets for Rose, and it goes on. The Sarasota Herald Tribune wrote a large article on Mr. Rose. He's Rose, who served on the as the Reds manager from 84 to 89. Applied for reinstatement to the game in March and has been hired to provide commentary for Fox Sports. Wouldn't you know it? Fox would grab him in a minute. They take all of these wonderful people and embrace them. Questionable behavior, questionable character. I have had for a long time since the baseball strike.
They like Ollie North, don't they?
Well, a man who lied before Congress and got by with it because he somehow managed to get...
Well, not Fox Sports, but Fox News.
Well, but it's Fox.
It's Fox.
It's the Murdoch system of doing things. His own company, the leaders nearly went to jail in England over the shenanigans that they were doing. So this is the kind of press that people follow and trust. I mean, I was watching Megyn Kelly last night, and I'm trying to think who... She was talking about this issue of the flag and so forth, and what it was really about. Bright lady, but very uninformed. And when you get half information, you get half-assed thought. In any case,
she only gets what's coming down the foxhole's pipeline.
Yeah, that is
the script, right?
Yeah, well, I don't call it the foxhole. I call it frequently or forever oxymoronic xenophobia, which is the same thing. It's an acronym for FOX. But anyway,
well, I call it the foxhole because people get trapped in holes, and all they can see inside the hole is what's in the hole.
What you're saying is they don't even know they're there.
They don't even know they're there.
That's that. So there's no there.
Right. That's why I call it the foxhole.
No, that's you know, and I saw, I know on Monday, you upset one of our callers with that term, and he got all enraged about that.
Well, I'll get used to it.
Yeah, well, you know.
But I think Pete Rose should get into the Hall of Fame.
Well, I do not.
We disagree on that.
You know what? I don't think the Hall of Fame means that much, and I'll tell you why. And I can go into more on Rose that proves that he was the scoundrel that he was. And I personally witnessed him at a dog track when he had his Dutch boy haircut. And this is some years back, of course, when he was still with the Reds. And he was sitting at a bar at the Tampa dog track, and he was betting on everything. The guy was addicted to betting and gambling. His hair was white when he was...
So was he losing?
I don't know. Well, it indicates in the article he lost a lot of money along the way. But he was betting on his own games. So when I watched the aftermath of the baseball strike, the baseball system tried to resurrect the sport with the phony home run derby. And I say phony home run derby because it never happened after they got the game going again. It was between Sosa and McGuire.
I remember that.
Yeah. And both of these guys...
Both on steroids.
Both of them got steroids stuff. But that, of course, you know that once they got the home run thing established, I forget what the number of home runs they hit were those years, but it was breaking all kinds of records. And
weren't they breaking 60, 70?
Oh, they were way up there, yeah. But I did a little umpiring of Little League in my day, and I know it's Little League, but there's...
Same game.
It's the same game, and the strike zone, if it's called legitimately, is called the same. And I watched where the strike zone was called on these two guys, on everybody that before either Sosa or McGuire came to bat. The pitch for most guys was from the chest to the knees. That was the strike zone,
right.
Up and down, and then left and right, of course. When Sosa came up to bat, the strike zone was from the chest to the waist, to the belt line.
So if it was below the groin, but above the knees, they were calling it a ball?
They were calling anything below the belt a ball, anything above the chest a ball. So anything to get that, so that pitcher was forced to throw into their home run hitting zone. With or without steroids, they're going to hit home runs more so if you're hitting.
More than likely.
Yeah, you're hitting into their power zone, they're going to crank them out. And with McGuire, the strike zone was called from the knee to the ankle. And I saw pitches down as low as the ankle.
Because that's where he likes to hit his runs.
That was his hitting zone.
Right.
So the two of them had all these home runs coming when the ball, the pitchers were forced to throw there to get a strike. Or they walked them.
So you're saying Major League Baseball was basically saying to the opponent, the opposition team,
everybody did that.
We need to do this for the excitement of the game, for the betterment of the whole game.
It was not hard to see. If anybody was happened to be looking.
So basically, give him a few home runs. If you can still win with his home runs, good. But
right? That is absolutely true. And if I hadn't witnessed it, I wouldn't have believed it. I watched.
So are they going to the Hall of Fame, those two guys?
Well, that's another question.
They haven't been banned at this point from the Hall of Fame, have they?
How strong do you have to be to hit a home run? Ted Williams did it. Did he do steroids? We don't know. We can't go back and check his dead body.
Yeah, were there steroids back then?
Well, I'm sure maybe he knew about it, but you didn't, and I didn't. The point is, we make these excuses to justify what America's game is, and why that's no longer...
But steroids alone won't allow you to hit a home run. You give me steroids, I'm probably not going to hit a home run.
How strong you are is how quick you are, and if you know...
And you still got to have the skill level.
Your eyesight has to be there, Mitch.
Yeah.
In other words, you have to know where... When I was doing my...
So if you have everything else, and you're hitting a fair amount of home runs, and you take steroids, you're going to hit more home runs.
Well, you're going to have the endurance, whether you'll hit more or not. I think it's the eyesight. And if you're going to get balls in... We know when you're pitching batting practice, they know where to pitch the ball to hit the guy to hit home runs. They have things for Little League kids to go to the stadium, and the heroes go out and hit home runs, or balls nearly out of the park, so that these kids from different teams can catch balls and they can win tournaments that way. They have it as a tournament thing. But the point is, if you're going to believe in a sport as legitimate, you can't have this kind of factor throwing in. It was after that was over, that was the end of the home run derbies. That went away.
Right.
You've not heard about it since. Ted Williams, they always said he had the greatest eyesight. And it's not, do they see how fast the ball is coming and they... No, it's timing. And as an example, I was in the Little League, and I did it for about three, 4 years. And this young, big kid, bigger than most of the other kids, but he was kind of fat and wimpy. And his father was just driving him nuts. His father would stand behind the... I was a head umpire for this thing at Siesta Key in those days. And the father would yell at the kid, do this, do that, do this. So finally I ordered the father away from behind the batter's cage.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you stand over there, nowhere in earshot. If I hear you close, you're not going
to
be here.
Yeah, the kid walks up to the bat. He either knows what he's going to do or not. No.
Well,
a father yelling at him is only going to confuse him.
But father had this kid emotionally a wreck. And the kid was literally shaking, afraid to even swing the bat because he was going to hear no end of it probably after the game was
over. Let me get back to Pete Rose.
Well, I'll make this little story finish up. So I told the kid, I said, listen, it's not that hard. He said, it's not. I says, no, it's not. I said, I don't want you to swing at the ball. Huh? What? What do you mean? I said, all I want you to do, realize this, when you hit a ball, it's out about 2 to 3 feet in front of you. And you lay the bat on the ball. You just embrace the ball with your bat. And it'll take care of itself, which is really what happened. You, when the ball...
Right, we got it.
Yeah, right. So the first ball he swung at, he missed. Strike one.
Strike one.
So here comes the second ball.
And here's the pitch.
He lays it out there and hits the ball down the line on the first base line. And it went at least to the wall.
And past the first baseman?
Way over the first baseman.
Oh, went over his head?
Way over his head. I mean, out to the fielder. And the fielder was running to get to the ball. And the kid is jumping up and down on the base.
Yeah.
He said, run. Get to first base and don't stop. He stopped on first. He's still celebrating that he hit the ball.
Yeah. and you're the ump. You're the ump and the coach, right?
I really was. And I did it because...
But it's Little League, so...
It's Little League. And it was,
I coached 7 years of soccer, so I know what you're talking about.
So I said, go to second base. So he went to second base. Well, you know, the kid's attitude was totally changed. And it's all because... Now, this is when people care about one another. I cared more about that kid being... happy within his own body and his frame and his mind than whether a game was won or lost or anything else. And the father, and I pointed to the father, and I said, now shut up forever. Do not say another word to him. Now yell
during the game.
After the kid got on base.
Yeah.
Do never tell him anything, another word, not another word. You have messed him up. You don't need to do that all over again. Anyway. So here we have that situation. Now we got Pete Rose playing games by betting on himself and what he can do.
But we don't know if he ever bet against his own team.
You don't know if he bet.
Well, there's no evidence.
Well,
there's no evidence, right?
There's evidence that he bet on games that he was in and that his team was playing. So
the evidence is that he was betting that he was going to win, right?
You don't know that either. You don't know either way. That's the problem.
But there's no evidence saying he bet against himself.
He involved a bet involving his team. That's the problem.
Right.
Because you're saying, well, he wouldn't do that. He'd want to win.
Well, and I've already had this conversation yet on Monday, but I want to say it on the air. And, I remember P. Rose. He did amazing plays. I mean, the guy was Mr. Hustle, right?
Well, you know, one thing too.
Well, let me say this.
All right, go ahead.
He was Mr. Hustle.
Called Charlie Hustle.
Charlie Hustle, right?
Yeah.
So when you watched him play, it was amazing some of these plays that he did, because anyone else you would have figured, you know, if he's playing the field, only Pete Rose got that ball. Only Pete Rose threw it that quick. Only Pete Rose, when he was a batter, not only was he a hitter, but he was a great base runner. He was great at every aspect of baseball.
Maybe that's why they stopped running bases in baseball. How many times?
Well, this is what I want to say.
All right.
So, you know, what motivated him to hustle and put that extra, he just put it all out there. You could just tell. Now, in hindsight, and here's what I'm proposing, is that he worked his butt off and did so much beyond what anyone expected a player to do, because he actually had a lot of money betting on himself and the team.
You're assuming.
It's an assumption. I have no proof, but there's no proof out there that he ever bet against himself. And the way he played would tell me he wouldn't work that hard if he was betting against his team.
Oh,
But if he was betting for his team, that could explain why he was that much more, we're going to lose this game. I'm going to die. I'm going to do these amazing things. I'm not going to lose this game. I'm just saying that.
I did some coaching.
I'm just saying that and there's a big difference if he was betting on himself to win or he's betting against himself. If he'd shown it, he was betting against himself, that would be much more severe.
There are bets that he lost, okay?
Well, you don't win. There's no baseball team that ever went undefeated. We have football teams that do that, right?
I just want to know.
I don't know if basketball.
I want to hear what the audience thinks. Mitch and I can debate this all day long. I think we can debate it, and I think it's debatable whether or not he bet to win or to bet just to win money. He did it for the money. The bookies know you want to win money. You can be way behind and get a few extra runs to make the game closer. But in any case, 941-745-1490, and the ethics of Pete Rose are in question here, but is the sport in question? I think it is, and I think it has been, and I think I call it bore ball because it's all organized for one purpose, to have certain teams end up in the thing. And what happens to baseball after the end of July hits? Not much. You get the people going toward the playoff, which takes forever to get to, and who cares when you go to watch football at that time of the year? Who's watching? Who cares? The matter of the flag, though, was coming back to that was talked about in the previous show by the victims of the whole thing. We talked about this on Monday. We also have another situation there's no sanctuary in the holy city is what that's been stated before.
So you want to talk about South Carolina, Charleston, Columbia, the Confederate flag?
Well, we beat that horse pretty hard, but I mean, maybe people, are you buying up the flags now that Walmart no longer sells them? Amazon, I guess, is not going to sell them.
Not me. I'm not going to spend my money, and if I did, I'd burn them.
But Mitch, I'm not asking you. I'm asking the audience out there. Are you out there going to do a flag? Euphemism for you is everyone. And in any case,
there is a run on those flags by a certain segment of our population. I think Walmart took them off the shelves already.
Yeah. The Paul Krugman writes a number of things, and he talks about. The next time you encounter some conservatives going on about growth, you might want to bring up the following list of names and numbers. Now realize this, that Jeb Bush, J-E-B, John Ellis Bush, I should say Jeb Bush, because it's J-E-B, that's the whole name right there. You might want to bring up the following name. Bill Clinton, 3.7 growth in the 8 years he was in office. Ronald Reagan, 3.4. And in the 8 years he was president. And then the case of Barack Obama with the recession that he inherited, the Great Recession, you only have 2.1 growth. But that's a pretty good growth rate considering the economics that we were in at the time. So it just, it is a situation.
Oh, we're talking about the Confederate flag and all.
Well, we also talk about economics and people.
Why don't you listen for a few minutes and then jump in the conversation. All right. All right.
We have a call, or do we?
They give a few minutes.
Okay, so they were not sure what to call and talk about, or what? What's the problem? In any case, caller, if you want to speak.
We can give him a couple minutes. It's Don from Largo.
Oh, Don from Largo. He's talking about the government that shuts you down. Yeah, well, Don, you just tell us what's new on the horizon for.
We need to give him a couple minutes.
Individual rights here. So anyway, I'm going on with the growth rates under the past president and the current president. At this point, Barack Obama's growth rate on average, with the recession for 6 years, was 2.1. Now, in another 2 years, the growth rate will go up under Obama because the economy is continuing upward on an upward scale. George H.W. Bush, 2.0, which was for 4 years, and George W. Bush was 1.6 in 8 years. Yes, that's the last five presidents, and the average rate of growth in the U.S. economy during their time in office so far, in Mr. Obama's case, Obviously, the raw numbers don't tell the whole story, but surely there's nothing in that list to suggest that conservatives possess some kind of magic for economic sluggishness, and they're going to bring it up to 4%, as good old Jeb talks about. Now, good old Jeb is aping or imitating Ronald Reckham. And Ronald Reckham, I predicted in 1980 on television in Illinois that we would see massive growth of debt. And that happened, it went from virtually no debt to Jimmy Carter left office. Carter left us with high interest rates at that time. So here we have another caller, I think. But as far as debt was concerned, we were less than $1 trillion in total debt when Carter left office. Total deficit for that particular year was under $60 billion. So we have a different economic circumstance.
All right, hang in there. We'll get it again. We'll get you a couple minutes.
When you look at Democrats leaving office and Republicans leaving office. And so we have two callers.
We do. We have we'll go to Lawrence first, then we're going to go to Don.
We only have 1 minute for Lawrence. If you're going to ask a question, and have a brief conversation.
All right. Well, hold on a second, because they could be talking now, but we can't hear them. I'll tell you when you can hear. So, Don, you're going to go after Lawrence.
No.
Good morning, Lawrence.
No, please let Don go first.
No.
Yes,
no,
I,
no,
I
you're
relinquish
first.
my time to Mr. Don,
no.
And then I would like to have a conversation with August. And what happened with Floyd J, by the way?
We will talk about that in some future time.
Oh, he quit. He walked out. And what about Mitch Mallett? Where's he coming back from?
Well, if you want a question other than the personalities, fine. If you want to do something like that, then, you know.
I'm glad you're excited to hear me
again.
It's
not a talk show. You're very defensive. Go ahead.
Go ahead with why? Now, which
with Don from Largo. Go ahead.
No, you're not running the show.
I think Lawrence is about out of time. You got anything else to say, Lawrence?
No, yeah. I'd like to ask
say?
About Slick Willie. Okay? Slick Willie.
Who's Slick Willie?
Are you allowed to talk about Ronald Rectum?
So what about Slick Willie?
Slick Willie, when he was president, governor of Arkansas, with his lovely, short, stubby wife, with the Southern Confederate enactment in that case. Congressman Mallett knows what I'm talking about. What say you about Slick Willie and his lovely, unshaved legged wife?
And Lawrence, turn down the radio in your background.
Yeah, we can barely hear you. You were getting drowned out by your own radio. Are you still there, Lawrence?
Yes, and I don't have my radio on.
All right, then, Don, if you have a radio on, turn it down.
Someone has got a radio in the background.
It must be Don from Largo. Your response, August.
What is it? I don't know what your question is. You've lost me.
Congressman, tell him what I'm talking about.
Let Lawrence.
I don't know what he's talking about.
You know what he's talking about? No.
I don't know.
Yeah, yes. Governor of Arkansas, Slick Willie Clinton, and his wife, and the Southern Confederate law enacted.
Yes, that was when we just lost you here again, I think.
Oh, what a great, smooth show you're running.
I think what he's referring to is the law that has the Flag Day celebration in Arkansas back in
All of a sudden you know!
Is that Lawrence?
I don't know.
That's Don.
Is that Don?
Don gave up.
Don gave up. Okay, what about what I was talking about? Go ahead, August.
Well, the in those days, and
those days. When? What about Ronald Rectum?
I just turned his mic down, so you can answer, because he's not giving you a chance to answer.
He wants to yell down, he has no regard for the other person. So it's hard to have regard for him, but I'll try. At Flag Day in those days, it did include in the southern states, and Arkansas was a border state on the Mason-Dixon line, so it tended to lean southern, and it honored the flag. But they didn't. Did they secede from the Union? I don't think so. So the point is that you had the honoring of those Confederate people and what their ancestors were, as if we owed them anything. And as far as I'm concerned, they were traitors, were then and those who keep the flag up still are. And to the extent that Bill Clinton would know that or not know that, he would know that. He was a very smart man, and he knew all about that. He playing that political game in those days probably was beyond what he also signed on to a death sentence to a someone on the death on death row in Arkansas, and flew from Washington down there to sign the papers to see the guy put to death. So there's a number of things I can fault Bill Clinton for, but running government, the man knew how to do it, obviously, and cared about government, not only state government, but federal government. He left us in a surplus situation when he left office after 8 years, nothing like Ronald Reagan did, or George H.W., who is by far referred to Ronald Reagan's economy as voodoo the last time he told the truth. And Stockman and all a lot of other Republicans did not respect Reagan's economy, and dropping the tax rate on the marginal tax rate down to 35%, which induced the debt like it did. It forced Volcker to raise the interest rates to 18% to pull in money to prop up the government because of what I think reckless Ronald did. I mean, he wrecked California, and he left us in the beginning of a wreckage. SNL crisis, Reagan caused that. Personally, he withdrew money, opened it up to the taps for the SNL crisis, which cost us $500 billion in 87. So I know this guy pretty well. But if you want to have the answer to this in a conversational way, Lawrence, please talk to me.
I want to respond. And I'm just going to put something down here before Lawrence does and sure. twists it the wrong way. Because, you know, there's trends in politics and viewpoints, and a lot of people, you go back to the 90s, because I'm about to say something that the Clinton-Gore campaign did. Well, I'll tell you what they did. For the southern states, there was a campaign button that said Clinton-Gore, and had the pictures of their face on it, and it was, in the background was the Confederate flag, and what the campaign was trying to say was, hey, there's two Southerners running for the White House right now. That's what they were saying. Now it's 2015 now.
Well, wait a minute. What's the point of it was they wanted to get votes in the South.
It was politics. They wanted to get votes in the South.
But that's an excuse. That's
what it was. And now you're going back 25 years. Mm-hmm. And the sensitivity there was a lot of white people didn't realize that the African-American population looked at that flag as an oppressive flag.
Now we have a disagreement, but that's all right. That's okay.
Well, maybe they did or they didn't, but no, they did have that campaign out there, and what their message wasn't, we hate blacks. Their message was, we're a couple Southern dudes here running for the White House. That's really what their message was.
Now today, certainly after this week. The politics, what people have to die for the politics to change, unfortunately.
So what guys like Lawrence like to do is they like to take the framework of a time in the past and then impose it on today's standards and go, look at what's going on.
Yeah, well, before we overcharacterize Lawrence, and I'm not, but we can disagree later after Lawrence gets his final point in here. So put him up so we can get
all right.
That.
Here, you're back, Lawrence.
You're back. Are you still there, Lawrence? Have you left?
Yes, I'm here, August. Thank you, Congressman. I would like to point out somebody that you have neglected to talk about that has showed leadership. And that would be Governor Nikki Haley of South Carolina. That is, I think, been the...
I applaud Nikki. I do.
Well, that's good. But Nikki Haley is showing more leadership than our president, or certainly Hillary Clinton.
No.
Oh, yes, you're interrupting me, Congressman.
Congressman.
August, are you going to let him do that?
I'm going to interject here because I don't disagree with you as to Nikki Haley. She didn't. She originally opposed the change some years ago, but now under these conditions, she's come forward. She hasn't done it quite as much as the former.
Hillary supported the flag.
Excuse me. She hasn't done it to the degree that Strom Thurmond's son has done. And Strom Thurmond, why are you laughing?
How about the honorable congressman from West Virginia? You know I'm talking about Robert C. Byrd.
Well, we're not going to. We can.
Well, no, we only want to talk about Republicans in a negative way, not Democrats.
Lawrence, you're yelling again. You can't. Are you able to talk?
Shoot the messenger. Shoot the messenger, August.
I'm going to give you a minute of conversation. If you don't want it, just say so, and I'll cut to the chase here. Nikki Haley, I'm going to talk about. I intend to bring her up because she's politically put herself in a great position to run as a vice president for whoever the Republican.
She has a lot of courage because when she made that speech, she didn't know how much backlash she was going to get from the Republican Party.
She definitely took a risk. And so, I mean, now Hillary is going to have to look.
She's a mensch.
Well, she's a mensch, if you will.
Menchette.
And I started to make another point. And if Lawrence will be quiet and let me make the full point, we can have a conversation here. So, Lawrence, the point is that Paul Thurmond was the son of Strom, who was 100 years old plus when he died, when he was the oldest standing.
What party was he in?
He was in the Southern Conservative Democratic Party.
I'm sorry, Democrat?
Yes, he was.
Okay.
But that's called splitting hairs over a
fight. You just neglected to say that. I wanted to add.
I left the Republican Party because Thurmond and Helms and those clowns became Republicans. I said, this is no longer the party of Abraham Lincoln. This is the party of racists.
Thank you.
So if you are a Lincoln Republican, you sure don't sound like one, Lawrence. But anyway, Haley has become a real factor.
Is she a Republican?
She's a factor in terms of the politics of the time.
She's a Republican.
Yes, she is. I didn't say she was a Democrat. I'm not saying that. I started, if you let me finish, but you're not good at that. You're not polite. That's your vice, by the way, Lawrence, that she's a Republican, and the Republican candidate that gets nominated would be very wise to go after her as a vice president, because she will really make a problem for the Democrats. I will admit that. But whether that means anything, the way things are going here, with all of the candidates that are running, apologizing for the flag first one way, then another, Santorum and some of these characters, where are their ethics? They're political. That's what you're bringing up, the politics of the Clintons of the past and changing to the present. Nikki Haley was for the flag, now she's against the flag. So the politics are what's going on here. And if you're honest about it, the politics of the Southern conservatives has never changed. They were Democrats when it convenienced them, that kept slavery and segregation in place, and now that the Republican Party's been compromised, and Reagan came in and helped compromise the Republican Party away from Lincoln, now you have the same clowns doing to the country what it did before, being disloyal, being traitorous to this country, and I think that's the issue. So whether they're technically of a party or not is not the point. Go ahead, Lawrence.
That was not the point I was trying to make, and it's your radio that's up, August.
I'm listening for your comment. I just made mine, so go ahead and you can wrap it up with what you say, Lawrence.
Yeah. How about the Clinton Foundation? Where does that fall in your bailiwick as to professorial opinion?
I think that is absolutely nothing to do with the politics. Nothing.
Let's do that for another show. That's a whole other show.
Is that your final point, Lawrence?
Thank you, Lawrence.
Thank you, Lawrence. There you go. All right. So we gave you more time than I intended to, but...
Yeah, you gave more time.
We lost Don in the process.
Don, call back.
Yeah, please call back, Don. We apologize for that. I'm going to... That is what Jeb Bush has done. One of the final statements of Krugman is interesting on Jeb. Why all the boasting about growth? The short answer surely is that it's mainly about finding ways to sell tax cuts for the wealthy. Such cuts are unpopular in and of themselves.
Hey, Don, hang in there.
Is Don back?
Yeah, Don's back.
Let's just go to Don. Don, wait. We're
right.
Not going to hold you
Don,
back.
Welcome to the Morning Edge.
Well, sorry about the cutoff before, Don. Don, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, what's on your mind, Don?
Well, I heard somebody say about the fiscally irresponsible Republicans. It wasn't George W. Bush the most fiscally irresponsible with his Medicare expansion and drug benefit expansion in two wars without paying for them, inheriting a...
Let me go to your point, Don. I think what I'm looking at is when in 1945, Don, this is what you want to look at. The debt to gross domestic product at the end of World War II was 120% of debt. A gross domestic product, that was 120%, okay? We proceeded then under Truman to the Marshall Plan, and then as Eisenhower, we went to the interstate highway system, we spent more money, that's more government spending. However, it's not what you spend, it's what you spend it on. Wars are wasteful money. You throw money into a rat hole, and it doesn't produce anything in the country you're in. So when we build roads in
Afghanistan, when we build roads in Iraq, and we do hospitals and all that in these other countries, that's fine for those countries if they don't destroy it. But we don't do it to our own country. We won't. We've got this character in the governorship now who would rather spend it out of the pockets of the people of Florida instead of taking the $50 billion from the federal government because he believes in states' rights to destroy the state. But anyway, coming through Eisenhower comes into the interstate highway system. That was $1 trillion or more, but all in investment, like the GI Bill was all in investment that put people educationally out there ready to be working, ready to produce for the country, ready to develop production, as was the highway system, increasing transport, all the things positive. And you come along, and then you have the Vietnam War that kicks in Eisenhower's period, the last period, and of course the mess created by the Dulles brothers, which was Iran. We created that mess to begin with those characters. But Eisenhower, as a responsible president, warned about the military-industrial complex. Then comes Kennedy cutting the taxes to 60 on the marginal tax rate, 60%. So it had gone from 91% from Eisenhower and back, all the way back through FDR, through World War II, and forward 60% from Kennedy forward. And then Nixon comes on and maintains that 60%, doesn't lower the taxes, but here comes Ronald Reagan, and he lowered the tax rate to 35%. And that's when we started into deficits, because Carter left office with us as a lender nation, that is fact. And then we come along and Reagan drops it to 35% marginal tax rates, which just destroyed the economic basis of the country. And then comes George G. Wiz, its father, and the father said these economics of Reagan were voodoo, and he raises the tax rates to 38%. And
just 3% more.
Just 3%, but he caught all kinds of hell for doing that. The Southern Republicans, or the Southern Democrats, the conservatives, did all that hell-raising. In any event, so you come to this history of the G. Wiz comes in after Clinton, lowered the debt from 5-plus trillion to 4-plus trillion. It was a trillion-dollar drop. And G. Wiz comes along and runs the debt up to 12 trillion. Within a very short time, with the wars and the excuse being 9/11, and now we're paying for it. And Obama comes in; he's held it somewhat in abeyance, but because of the recession that we've been left in, the debt goes up, and we're up to around $17 trillion.
A lot of that increase, there was a huge increase in the debt as Obama first took office, because we literally had a stimulate the economy. When you had to spend money,
when you're looking at, yes, that's true. So John, let me. I'm going off. Mitch, you can come in on this, but Mitch is making a seeming excuse. But just taking from 08, which was the depth of the recession and near depression, Obama inherited.
Saved us from a depression.
And saved us. It literally did save us from a depression. And proceeded to do what Eisenhower did, put in stimulus and monies that way to get people to work. Because when people are not working, they're not producing tax revenue for the country.
It's not producing value. The economy is based on how much value and the productivity of the society.
That goes to the same point. But now we are at around 17 and holding. But now it turns out most of the debt we have today is a debt to ourselves through pensions and things like that. So we have another caller. Anyway, now, Don, now that I've said all that, where are you going?
Well, I don't know. It just seems like the fiscally irresponsible Republicans have got us into this, and they call themselves fiscally conservatives. But my main issue is still election law reform. I think we can look to the Constitution and qualify people according to the job descriptions in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And then when there's a big media buy or a postcard buy or direct mail buy, haven't noticed that there are other candidates. Go to fec.gov/candidates. We've grown into a professional bribe-taking incorporated ruling class. And
well, we're going to hold you on for a little bit longer, Don, and we're going to have to go to a commercial shortly. But you're right. But I think the Electoral College is the culprit, because the only people that really vote for people into office in our general election is the Electoral College. You want to go to a commercial?
We can go to a commercial.
Yeah, we have to do that, right? We've got to honor our sponsors. But just hold on, Don, and come back to your thoughts and collect them around that idea.
Thank All right, you. Without a bumper.
Sarasota is home to a true gift, the Posture Clinic of Sarasota, with Dr. Mark D'Amato, 4450 South Tamiami Trail. Dr. D'Amato is a veterinary chiropractor, treating horses, dogs, or your favorite four-legged friend. First and foremost, animal chiropractic care is not intended to replace traditional veterinary medicine. Complementary care is a type of care that works with your vet, and certainly not instead of them. To find out more information, call Dr. Mark D'Amato at 941-927-7009. That's 941-927-7009. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Mark treats two-legged patients, too.
Imagine a world where everyone can access an attorney about any legal issue. Now, imagine a world where everyone can afford it. Thanks to Legal Shield, that is the world we live in today. A world where one legal service company is helping millions of families live life on their own terms. So instead of worrying about all the things that can go wrong, for as little as $20 a month, they can get on with their lives, knowing legal advice is a phone call away. The service Legal Shield provides is one of a kind. Our unique network of dedicated law firms is the key to providing a high-quality customer experience. With a law firm in 49 states and 4 Canadian provinces, we have your legal needs covered wherever you may be. And because our law firms are prepaid, their focus is on serving you rather than billing you. From the trivial to the traumatic and everything in between, our attorneys are always there to not only give you legal advice, but also write letters and make phone calls on your behalf. Prepare legal documentation such as wills and powers of attorney, and even represent you in court for covered civil cases should you ever need it. Plus, with an extensive library of complimentary forms and information, you can download what you need when you need it. Imagine for one low monthly fee that you and your family can talk to an attorney about any legal issue without worrying about high hourly costs. Join Legal Shield today and you can stop imagining and start living life in a whole new way, empowered, with complete confidence, and total peace of mind. Legal Shield. Worry less. Live more.
This part of the Morning Edge is brought to you by Callens, Little, and Delgado, practicing personal injury, criminal defense, and family law. Call 941-749-1446. 941-749-1446.
I may be crazy, but it just may be a lunatic you're looking for. Turn out the lights.
Yeah, shut out the lights.
There you go. Don, you're back on, and I think the issue you might want to really go after is study how to get rid of the Electoral College, because I think that goes to your
point. I just want to say something about...
Sure.
Well, Legal Shield, right now, if you're interested, go to this website, malletagency.com, MalletAgency.
There you go.
.com. Malletagency.com.
If you don't know how to spell, then try to remember what Mitch said.
Malletagency.com. And,
I know.
Just go, I should have done that while we
you've got enough of an ad in here. We can do that over time. We'll get to that.
Yes, we will.
So, Don, go ahead with your. You heard what I said about the Electoral College. I think that's more significant. There's a couple of things that would. And if you want to look at California on the Electoral College and New York State, both of them are going to do that. They're going to the Electoral College. And the other thing you can do is open primaries. Open primaries mean someone like you can run for office, and you can be written in, and the parties don't dictate who's on the ballot anymore when you have an open primary. That's meaning it's not a party primary any longer. You get rid of the open primaries. You put in the open primaries, get rid of the party primaries, and you've got a different country. This goes to some of your points, I think. What do you think, Don?
Yeah, it's got to be something other than the party leaders deciding who's the candidate.
Exactly,
and
what's
the
been
candidate's
happening.
Just being shoved down the tube, you know.
Yeah.
So, and, it's a profession. It's professional.
Without condemning the past, are you going to think about what your plan is for the future? Because I think what I suggested in the Electoral College and the open primaries is maybe a way to go.
Like I say, they need to put a fec.gov/candidates. You can go there when they have it. When they have the multi-million dollar media buy by the people who have the money, there would be a way for other candidates to be recognized.
Mm-hmm. If you get this other thing going, Don, why don't you call back after you've studied Electoral College and open primaries a little bit? And California has already enacted.
Gotta go.
All right. Well, thank you, Don.
All right. Thanks, Don. Let me just say something here, because if you want to, if you have a strong party with strong leadership, you only have a few candidates running. I think that's the premise that Don was talking about. If you look at the current Republican Party, with a couple dozen candidates that they have going on, I'd say there's weak leadership coming out of the Republican Party, and it's a free-for-all right now.
Without doing that, which I understand that's a theory, as much as, you can say
it's
that.
It's an observation. It's my observation.
Well, I'm not saying it's not an observation. I'm not even saying it's wrong. I'm simply saying it's theoretical. I think it's the party primaries damage the democracy of this country, in my honest opinion. I changed parties. I came to a community here that's primarily Republican and conservative, and I became a Democrat. I did that, and now I'm an independent. So I will vote as a liberal, fiscal liberal, social liberal, fiscal conservative. I always have, and I always will. But how I vote and how anyone else votes is their business. But I do think if you're going to, we see right here in Manatee County and in Sarasota County, and on Friday we're going to talk with Dennis Mealy about this very issue. At-large elections cost the minority party and the majority view a lot, because there are 7 seats in the county commission. That's your government right here in Manatee County.
Right.
So 2 of those seats are at large, and
right.
they swing. You only need 2 other votes to go with those 2, and the developers own those 2 seats, and you don't have any kind of independence.
I'll tell you, it's broken up, and for full disclosure, I serve on the executive board of the Manatee County Democratic Party. I serve as the state committeeman, which means I represent Manatee County to the state party, but I've been involved for 15 years. And hold on a second, caller. We'll get to you. The way the county commission is, you're absolutely right. We have 2 at large. There's a bit of a majority with the Republicans. It's not massive, but no. Because of that, the Republicans are going to get the 2 at large seats, and then they divided up the rest of the county. Where really we only got a shot at really 1 county seat. Because they kind of gerrymandered it in a way where, and that's what we have. We won one County Commission seat, and that's the way it's been for a few decades now.
Well, let's go to the caller and see what the caller's point is.
All right. Go ahead, caller.
Go ahead, caller.
Welcome to the Edge.
Give full disclosure on your congressional...
Oh, this is Lawrence. Well, in any event,
let's finish what
you were saying. So, Lawrence, you've had a turn at the... If you're willing to have the conversation for 1 minute, we'll do that. Otherwise, we're going to...
You're
going to
give people more than one call a show?
If he's going to have a...
He wants to bring up... I heard what he said.
He wants to bring up what?
I was official candidate for the Democratic nomination for the 16th congressional district for the 2014.
So was Floyd.
Yeah, Floyd was a couple of election cycles.
That's right. So I mean, so what? I mean, what's that prove?
That means we have some experience.
Anyway, the Democrats don't have a lot of good experience in this area. The at-large elections dictate that. And the at-large elections dictate the county, because if you have one Democrat and one liberal Republican, you can cause something to happen. But when you have large elections, which are owned by the developers, Baruff and I think Neil, they own those guys, and they tell them how to vote. They just do. And in Sarasota, all five are that way. And an illustration, I've used this on the show before, we'll talk about it on Friday with Dennis, we've had the same conversation. They own all of the commission and all the decisions, and they put us into debt all the time. But a quick call, the answer to Lawrence, we will cut you off if you're not going to have a conversation, if you're going to do a yelling match. Come on, Lawrence.
Well, you got 1 minute left.
Yeah.
Is he there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, Lawrence.
You were talking about full disclosure. Mitch Mallett announced on your show his running, and I was wondering why that there is no disclosure or discussion in regards to that flaming loss.
I don't think you're running for office now, are you?
I'm not a candidate currently.
Yeah, so you may become one?
Probably not in the next election cycle.
Okay, so not now. So thank you, Lawrence. It's been good. We're coming to the end of the show.
Can you imagine, full disclosure, this is my second show with you. it would take 10 shows to fully disclose my whole past.
You,
right?
So we're going to be talking to Dennis on Friday, and we have some other things to talk about then, and I'm sure that...
Let me disclose something else.
Well, go ahead.
I'm a Legal Shield associate, and I'm also an independent associate with Marisol Solar. I've been around since 1977.
We'll extend a little longer and talk about the solar. What's the story on that, Mitch?
So I've been with them a few months. In the 80s, I had my own solar business, and I met Scott Agenfield at EcoFest and started talking.
Well, without naming names of companies, what's happening with the solar business?
You know, here's something that's interesting. In 2014, there was more solar installation in this country than in the previous 30 years. In the first 5 months of this year, 2015, there was already more solar installation in the first 5 months than there was last year in 2014. There are now more people working in the solar industry than they are in the coal industry. So people screaming, we're going to lose all these coal jobs.
Big coal ain't so big anymore. That's really true.
Right. And right now, it's affordable enough if you amortize it out anywhere from 12 to 20 years, your solar purchase. You can take yourself virtually off the grid and have solar electric and hot water on your roof. And your monthly payment for your system will be smaller than your savings. So you have positive cash flow right from the
smaller
beginning.
Than your saving? I'm not sure what you mean by that.
That means the monthly payment for your solar system will be smaller than your savings.
AM. Yeah,
Keep going. We'll go past this. Now keep going. Now you can.
All right, you gotta go. You got by law. You gotta let that play through.
I know. Now you can talk.
Ed wants to jump in there and do a station announcement.
Well, when he comes, and we'll just.
All right,
but that takes a little bit longer. Go ahead.
So and that's what I do. I go to people's homes and businesses now. Mm-hmm. And in the 80s, I was a licensed energy auditor. I was solar certified. And
years ago, when Jimmy Carter was in office, we had solar, and I had solar hot water. It was fantastic. But because Reagan killed the whole thing when the time came to repair, a lot of people went out of the business. I couldn't find a repairer. because
a good plumber should be able to fix it.
Well, but I didn't. I tried.
And the solar tax credits ended January 1st, 1986. It was formed in the Energy Act in 1978. Mm-hmm. And the Reagan administration actually tried to get that sunsetted law killed early.
Mm-hmm.
And
but
couldn't find enough Republicans to vote against
it. But if somebody gets a solar now, do they have to worry about repairing it down the road if the Republicans get into the general?
Duracell Solar has been around since 1977.
So that you don't have that problem.
SunPower, which is the collectors that we use, and also FPL uses exclusively, mm-hmm. has a 25-year parts and labor, no question asked, mm-hmm. warranty.
Mm-hmm. And well, Mitch, we're going to probably have to end the show right there, and we'll talk about all this on Friday. And
it's been great being on the show.
Well, thank you, Mitch, for standing in. Floyd had some personal problems. He's in the middle of a very... His wife and he are having difficulties, and I won't go into any more than that, but that is the nature of why he's not here today and won't be in the future. He's got too much distracting him, so I'm sorry that Floyd had to leave under those circumstances, but that is what...
Floyd's a great guy.
Yes, he is.
Julie's a great gal.
Yep.
I've known both of them for probably 15 years now.
Mm-hmm.
They're both friends.
In fact, I would like you to contact her to talk about her father. Is it William Manchester?
Yes.
Yeah.
He wrote quite a few political biographies.
Right, so let's see if we can get her on to discuss her father's situation. I'm sure that Floyd wouldn't mind, but anyway, that...
Well, her father's situation, he's passed away.
Yes, well, he's dead, he's deceased. No, I mean as to what he wrote and what he was about as a father and what he spoke for, and that's if we can have that conversation with her. I've got an author we're going to be having probably next week or so, and some other authors. But yeah, let's do that. Anyway, we'll talk to you on Friday.
All right, very good. And we are out of here. We have a closing theme, right?
Yeah, should have somewhere.
OPM is taking significant steps to meet our responsibility to secure personnel data. It is clear that OPM needs to accelerate these efforts.
Archuleta also tells Senator she's angry about reports of substandard service from the credit monitoring firm hired to work with victims of this federal data breach. Linda Kenyon, SRN News, Capitol Hill.
ExxonMobil has temporarily ceased oil production on three platforms off the coast of Santa Barbara because of an oil spill last month that crippled the pipeline that's used to transport crude to refineries. More details at SRNnews.com.
More and more people are...